But up first here in the hour, we're happy to welcome back to the show a best-selling author. You know him from the Gwendy trilogy, two of those three, co-written with Stephen King, and his last book, which was a smash success, Chasing the Boogeyman. He is back with a new one entitled Becoming the Boogeyman, which officially went on sale just yesterday. We're so happy to be joined by Richard Chismar. Rich, thanks for being with us again.
Hey, thanks for having me back. Appreciate it.
Well, I shouldn't after what you've done to me. Man, oh man, you did it. You did it again. It's amazing. We were talking about it earlier on the show. I know this is a work of fiction, and yet the way it's constructed, about 20 pages in, I'm completely wrapped up in the story and worried about you and your family.
I love hearing that. That's the equivalent of whenever I email or text Stephen King and say, dude, I lost sleep last night, and I get back in a little laughing emoji. You know, he delights in that, and so do I now.
Well, the first book, or the last book, rather, was indeed, that part's not fiction. It was a big success. What was it like? What was the aftermath of having a New York Times bestseller for you?
You know what? It was honestly, and I think authors say this often, and I'm not sure they always mean it, but I promise you I do. It was a surprise. Right before Chasing the Boogeyman came out, I had a little bit of trepidation, which usually does not occur with me. Once I'm happy with the story, then I let it go and I'm fine. If it finds an audience, wonderful, and if it doesn't, that's okay too, as long as it pleased me. But with Boogeyman, the first one, Chasing the Boogeyman, right before publication, I started thinking, this book has a lot of buzz, and it's really not a big story. It's just kind of an old-fashioned campfire story about the, you know, every small town has that boogeyman. And Edgewood, where I grew up, just happens to have a real-life boogeyman who's doing bad things. And I was a little worried, but what I discovered through reader feedback was that it's a universal story. Like I said, every small town has the haunted house. Every small town has the legend. And people responded to that. And it was a nice surprise for me.
And now, one of the things that is fictionalized in Becoming the Boogeyman is that there's a film based on Chasing the Boogeyman. And I'm telling you, I hope there is. There needs to be at some point. It'd be great.
You know what? I hope so, too. And things look good. Before the strike, we were, you know, kind of forging ahead with a good director and a good writer. So I'm hoping that now that the strike's over, that we pick up some momentum again.
Well, one of the things that's very interesting in this book is it also, along with telling the story of the boogeyman and Edgewood, it also talks about our fascination as a culture with crime, with murderers, and especially with serial killers. In this case, you know, people buying Free the Boogeyman shirts, wearing burlap masks, just like Josh Gallagher, and that speaks to really what our country is like these days.
It really does, and that's something I tried to explore in a non-heavy-handed way in Becoming the Boogeyman, because there's a very fine line. You know, I don't have a shirt with Michael Myers on it. You know, I just walked out of my house into my office, and Halloween was playing on the television. I love that movie. I don't have that shirt, but I would wear a T-shirt with Michael Myers. But on the other side of that line, there are people who wear T-shirts that have Ted Bundy's face on it, that have Charlie Manson's face. And that's a whole different, you know, creature there. So I try to explore that in the book, how there's, you know, we have a fascination. People ask me all the time why I think that is. These serial murderers are so different from most of us. It's almost like we're fascinated by an alien, you know, from another planet. So I think there's a quest for understanding. And I think it's also a case of, you know, human nature. You know, if we look at that darkness close enough, it's somebody else's darkness. It's, you know, we can put the book down, put our head on the pillow, and we know we're safe. So I think there's a little bit of a ritual there, is what another writer, Michael Caritas, said, and I really agree with that.
We're talking with Richard Chismar about his new book, Becoming the Boogeyman. So as the book begins, you're still basking in the afterglow of the success of Chasing the Boogeyman, Josh Gallagher behind bars, and the slightly fictionalized Rich Chismar is the only guy that Gallagher will speak to, and then strange things start happening again in Edgewood.
Yes. Yes, they do. I hope my goal with this is that, you know, if a reader picks it up, the first chapter's kind of long, So I don't think they can do it. Maybe they can. I was going to say, I guess they can kind of loiter around inside the bookstore and read the first chapter. But that's kind of my challenge. For anyone who had read Chasing the Boogeyman, if you can read the first chapter of Becoming the Boogeyman and not, you know, take it up to the counter and take it home, then I haven't done my job. But this is one of those few cases where I feel like the first chapter nails it. The first chapter came to me fully formed one day when I was mowing the lawn, and that's the only reason I decided to write a sequel, is because it just came to me, and I knew that the reveal at the end of the first chapter would be shocking, and it ties it back into Chasing the Boogeyman. So that's my goal there.
So is there a challenge involved in including yourself as a main character and including members of your family in the book?
It is an interesting challenge. In some ways, it made it easier for me because I wrote a lot of that through life. You know, I wrote about the house I lived in. I didn't have to imagine it. Same thing with our property and the fence line where certain, you know, integral parts of the book take place. And the same thing with my friends and the cast of characters. You know, I really did write about my wife and my two sons, and everyone's delighted to be in the book except for my wife. She is the one who is not happy. She's refusing to read Becoming the Boogeyman until it comes out in paperback, and her reasoning is this way she doesn't have to discuss it with anyone. She can say, I can't talk about it. Spoilers, I haven't read it yet. the main challenge is just trying to be as authentic as I can, because I think the temptation is to, you know, make Rich Chismar a triathlete who has a granite chin and no gray in his hair. But the whole reason I put myself in the first book and continued into the second was because I really felt like that was the only way I could tell this story as honestly as I wanted to. And it's very revealing, the things that I, you know, put pen to paper on and kind of revealed some secrets about myself. So, it in that way, it is challenging, but it's a lot of fun, too.
Hi, Rich. This is Bruce Pratt. I teach creative writing at Maine, and one of the questions I wanted to ask you as soon as I read Chasing the Boogeyman, are you getting a reaction from academics about how valuable this book could be as a teaching tool? Because everybody wants hybrid literature now. They want things to combine. They blur the lines between fiction and nonfiction. Because I would think it would be right up the average MFA book list if I was to compile one.
Right. Well, I appreciate that. If you have a mailing list of all these people, I'll send them postcards.
Well, I just wondered if they'd reached out to you, because I it would seem so logical to do that. I don't teach at that level.
I've only heard from, I've received a tremendous amount of online mail, you know, emails and posts on message boards and that kind of thing and social media. But I've only heard from a few academics who have said this is, you know, this would be a great tool to make available to my students, that kind of thing. I have spoken at a few libraries and in high schools, and I've definitely gotten that reaction to where, they were interested in teaching it, that kind of thing.
Well, Rich Chismar is a great character, but also in so many ways, as it was in Chasing the Boogeyman, Edgewood becomes a character in the story as well.
Yeah, Edgewood is my... You know, it's kind of my Gary / Castle Rock. And I actually steal a little from Steven there when I talk about can a city be haunted, like he wrote about in It. Because I was just, you know, I was kind of feeling it in that moment, and I had to make that connection. But the first book really is about the loss of innocence, not only for me as a young, you know, man on kind of perched there on the cusp of adulthood, but also for my small town, because It was my Ray Bradbury, you know, peaceful, safe place in the world. And this boogeyman invaded it. And there was a great quote that I used in there that essentially says, you know, once your innocence is lost, it can never be regained. And that theme runs through the whole connection between me and Edgewood.
Well, yeah, we talked about this when Chasing the Boogeyman came out. The recollections of your youth that were, I assume, very much yours, that were in that book, were so beautiful. And now in the new book, you're working on a book called Edgewood Looking Back. And I would definitely buy and read that book, because those memories ring true with so many of us who grew up in small towns.
Right. Thank you. No kidding. Within the last half an hour, I just, you received a private message on Instagram from a very kind, older woman. And this is what she said. She said, "I sure hope you're working on Edgewood looking back." And my response was, "One day." Because that doesn't even feel like work. When I'm writing about that stuff, I'm just smiling ear to ear. And the idea of sitting down one day and just, putting together a collection of those memories would be, like I said, it would be, if someone actually paid me to do it, it'd be like stealing.
Well, I don't want to give away any spoilers here, but I do want to mention a couple specifics from the book that, frankly, just scared the hell out of me. You introduce a new character, Henry Matheny. Jesus, that's all I'm going to say. Jesus, Rich.
Yeah, I had fun with that. Obviously, I've done a lot of reading, a lot of true crime and a lot of, research, just because, human monsters are terrifying to me. I can't write very convincingly when I write about vampires and that kind of thing. And I think that's one of my attractions to Steve's work and some of the other folks who work so well in the supernatural. It's just, wow, I read it, I'm entertained, I'm scared, I'm also envious. I wish I could do that. The human monsters are what I've always kind of focused on. And old Henry, a little bit came out of research and a whole lot came out of just me thinking, what is the worst scenario I can think here that isn't cliched? And it's all about human masks. And Henry, you get to see Henry's mask slip once in a while. And to me, there's nothing scarier than that.
The first book of Stevens that I read was Salem's Lot when I was in high school. And at that moment in the book when Danny Glick, who is now a vampire, appears at the window, I think I let out a scream. It just completely scared me. And I did it again in Becoming the Boogeyman. And I don't want to give anything away, but you'll know it involves a mannequin in your yard. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, I've been asked a lot, what do you have against mannequins? And I'm like, I don't know. With the first book, Chasing the Boogeyman, again, I had several true stories from police officers and detectives that, who I know well, but none of them felt right for that part of the book where he was telling me his creepiest moments. So that's where the mannequin came in, because again, I just, I put myself in his shoes and I think, okay, there is so many possibilities of what's behind that door in the dark in that home. So I tried to think what would freak me out the most, and just the idea of those mannequins, posed and everywhere and candles and the whole thing, and then what's in the basement. I was like, yeah, I think I'd be retiring from the force after that night.
Well, and the conversations that you have with Josh Gallagher are so fascinating. What kind of research did you do into, I assume, profilers or others talking with serial killers? Because those conversations seem so real.
What's interesting is I've obviously read quite a few, true crime and encyclopedias of crime and those kind of things over the years. But when it came time to sit down for Becoming, I purposely stayed away from all of that. Because I was terrified that I would, subconsciously, pick up on things and write something that wasn't, wholly original or mine. So I really just tried to, I treated him, I used that phrase human monster, and I kind of tried to focus on that first part of that, the human, and have a person-to-person discussion and what I would think it was like. But again, you're going to see when certain buttons are pushed, you're going to see the mask slip. And, I did an interview recently where it was a podcast, and the host just said there was a moment in the dialogue between them where he says, I could have taken you any day, at any time. And then just the hairs on his neck, stood up. And I said, that's great, because when I wrote that, this is the same thing. To have this guy who essentially is telling you in one breath that we have this amazing connection, I love you, buddy. You're the only person I trust, and the only person I'm going to talk to. You're the one who, in my youth, treated me like a normal person. Yet he's capable of saying that, and you know that he's being honest. So he was watching you, and at any point he could have taken, your life or anything that was important to you away from you. And that, when I wrote that, I remember it. I was sitting right here at the desk in my office, and it was late at night, and it bothered me very much.
Well, solving this recent string of killings in Edgewood was great. I didn't see it coming, which is always the mark of a well-written piece, and yet it made perfect sense when we got there. And again, no spoiler, but suffice it to say, there's plenty of room for this story to continue.
There really is, and I, again, when I started this book, I had no intention of that with chasing. I had no intention to the point where, you know, I said no when people asked me. With this one, when I started, I had no intention. When I was halfway through, I had no intention. When I was three quarters of the way through, I had no intention. And then somewhere in that last 25% of the book, everything was leading to that moment. And I didn't quite know how that moment was going to be put on the page. But when I got there, I realized it doesn't need to be much. It's just that last little section of the book just says everything that needs to be said. And hopefully, your people will close the book and kind of shake their head and say, son of a gun. And try to put it in their memory bank that if there is a third Boogeyman book, that they line up to buy it, hopefully.
Well, there's no question about that. And I will say, much as with Chasing, the pictures are the cherry on top of the delicious ice cream sundae of horror here, because, I don't know, your friends and neighbors seem to be more than willing to pose as victims and killers.
Oh, everyone. Like I said, literally everyone except my wife. She gave me a hard time all through becoming the Boogeyman. You know, when we kind of started going back and forth about, you know, anything, you know, I didn't quite get out there quick enough to help her unload the groceries. I'm like, oh, I'll make it up to you. I'll write a love scene in the book. And I would get the stink eye, you know, like, oh, don't you even think about it. So I had fun with it, but she did not. So, but everyone else, yes, my neighbors, you know, they line up to volunteer their daughters to be victims and the whole thing. And you know, I already had one of my buddies, his picture is too small, and you can't see his face clear enough. So I told him, you know, well, if I get a chance, you'll get a close-up in the third book.
Well, becoming the Boogeyman, it is great. It is a more than worthy successor. I think it raises the stakes even more. It's a fascinating book. You'll read through it quickly, but my recommendation, do not read it late at night. Man, did I have some messed up sleep as a result of that. But it's great, and we wish you as much success, if not more, with this one, Rich. It's so great to talk with you again. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you both so much. I really appreciate it. I love talking to you guys, and thanks for the kind words.
We'll catch you when the new one comes out. Thanks again.
Thank you. Take care, guys.
You too. Rich Chizmar, the book is Becoming the Boogeyman. It is available everywhere.